So this presentation is a little bit different. I think I'm probably going to need to spend a little more time giving background on what is healthcare transition. My disclosure, again, no personal financial relationships. So what is healthcare transition and how is this different? So the American Association of Pediatrics defines healthcare transition as the planned and purposeful movement of adolescents and young adults from child-centered to adult-centered care. So for healthy young adults, this is simply transferring from a pediatrician to an adult primary care provider. But youth with special healthcare needs, this is a much more complex process, moving from a pediatric subspecialty care model to an adult care model that would involve subspecialty, primary care, and reproductive care, as well as some very radical changes in coverage, and some radical changes in the ways they're expected to assume responsibility for their own care. This applies to a range of youth with a range of limitations. In this particular presentation, I'm going to speak most specifically about youth who are cognitively and physically able to assume responsibility for most of their own care. This is also an issue with young people who are developmentally disabled or are going to need continuing family-centered care. But in this case, we'll be talking about young adults who can be expected to live responsibly on their own. So transitioning to adult care can mean many changes in the way healthcare is provided to young adults. So in the pediatric care model, their medical home is normally a subspecialist. That's where they receive their vaccinations. That's who they see most often. Youth have strong attachments to that pediatric care team, and that's related to the following point. These youth have major histories of medical trauma, repeated hospitalizations, in the case of some transplant recipients, dialysis, many surgeries, complications, and they have a lot of trust and attachment for their pediatric team. They know these people have their backs, so to speak. So the prospect of transferring to a new adult care doctor who does not know their history and who they don't trust can be intimidating. There are dramatic changes in coverage and payment for their health care. And this is occurring in a background of normal young adult development. They have relationships, they're going to school, they're looking at vocational and educational opportunities beyond high school. So all of the normal stresses and strains of adolescence are occurring as they're also trying to navigate some major health care changes. So these are some differences between the pediatric and adult healthcare system. So pediatric care is family-oriented. The parents are strongly involved in care planning, and the parents are strongly involved in managing the illnesses at home. In adult care, they are expected to take individual patient responsibility. So pediatric care, again, it's a subspecialist-focused type of care, whereas in adult care, they would primarily see their PCP, visit a specialist sometimes, and also have reproductive care as well. So in pediatric care, there is Medicaid, there's state wraparound programs that provide durable medical equipment, social work. In the adult system, there is a patchwork of coverage options. In California, we have a lot of issues with immigration and undocumented. They are covered in the pediatric system by our wraparound care, and there are they need to move to a different system of providers after they become adults. There are gaps during transition. In the last 2 years, we have been managing major change related to ACA on the programs that are implemented under that. And often adult care does not cover durable medical equipment. Pediatric care providers are flexible. They understand when you need to reschedule an appointment for finals or something like that. Adult care, the office policies are more rigid, and youth often have employment situations where it can be more complex to manage, appointments because their employers are less flexible as well. And then this is a very important difference. In pediatric care, the providers are often underprepared to deal with sexuality and reproductive health needs in adolescents and young adults. Whereas in adult care, providers expect patients to have normal, healthy adult sex lives. They're not surprised to see significant others come in to appointments. So they're expected, you know, to have normal adult relationships. So a little bit about Children's Hospital Los Angeles. We're a large tertiary care pediatric hospital serving the urban Los Angeles region and associated with the Keck School of Medicine at USC. In the last few years, CHLA's Division of Adolescent Medicine has become more involved in the issue of assisting youth receiving care at CHLA and learning to take responsibility for their own care. Just a brief background, that this is a problem is a huge victory for pediatrics. 20 years ago, less children with these severe conditions were surviving into adulthood. The care of in many cases, cancer care has improved a lot, transplant care has improved a lot. So that we have this problem in a systemic kind of way is a victory for us. An important thing to consider in the case of what I'm discussing here is in the state of California, coverage from California Children's Services for wraparound care ends at age 21, and so most youth will transition between the ages of 20 and 21 somewhere in there. When I've spoken to transition programs in other states, it's typically it's typically 18 or 19, and it will usually be dependent on state policies. So even youth with private insurance will typically transfer over at the time when state policy is usual. So the My Voice Adolescent Transition Clinic. In 2012, Dr. Diane Tanaka at CHLA Division of Adolescent Medicine established the My Voice Transition Clinic to work with youth and their families in preparing for the transition to adulthood. They go through several areas of concern for this youth, so vocational career planning that takes into account their medical needs, their medical outcomes, independence, quality medical care, and education and empowerment. It consists of medical, nursing, and social work professionals, and this number is outdated. I think we're up to about 120 young people right now. So My Voice Services are providing adolescent-focused primary care, reproductive care, and referrals to adolescent-appropriate mental health services. We provide specialized transition planning services, medication management, healthcare passports, preparation for adult coverage, so anything that legally and paperwork needs to be done in adolescence for adult care, vocational educational assistance, and development of self-advocacy skills. Patients are seen every 6 months from ages 16 to 19, and beginning at age 20, they receive more intensive services. So as part of developing the program, we conducted a needs assessment with youth receiving services at CHLA subspecialty clinics. So 100 young people ages 15 to 21 were recruited from four outpatient clinics, primarily divided into two groups of 50 transplant recipient patients and 50 rheumatologic patients between December 2011 and January 2013. So participating youth had a qualifying medical condition and were cognitively competent to assume responsibility for their own care. Research was overseen by our Committee on Clinical Investigation. Parental consent and assent was received for youth under 18, and participant consent was for patients 18 and over. So an anonymous computer-assisted survey, and they were compensated with a $15 Target gift card. Wrong direction. So demographics, they were in age, the mean was 17 and a half. They were even split male and female, predominantly Hispanic, which reflects some of the demographics within Los Angeles. And 81% of them were US born. Yes. Okay, so as I spoke before, this is occurring in a background of normal adolescent development. So many of them were in steady relationships, many of them were sexually active, some identified as LGBT, and substance abuse, you know, regular use of alcohol and marijuana as we would expect in a community sample. So with regard to this analysis, so while the study was intended as a needs assessment, portions of the study period overlapped with the operation of the clinic. Demand for the clinic services from our subspecialty care was fairly high, so we were ramping up quickly. So 16% of the patients who were recruited in the survey had previously been seen in the MyVoice clinic. So the period of overlap was relatively short, so no patients would have received more than two clinic intervention visits. So this is a very small intervention time. So the average age of MyVoice patients was about 1 year older. Clinic participants did not differ by gender. Our renal transplant program was a huge early adopter of these services, so a larger proportion did come from the renal transplant program, but we had all the subspecialty clinics were represented. So these are some of our findings. The thing that surprised us was when we looked at the number of youth who had received services at the MyVoice clinic, they were more likely to state that the support and preparation from their doctors was sufficient, and they were significantly less likely to have any concerns about switching from their current doctor to one who sees adults. So survey participants were given an opportunity to express in detail their concerns. So these were primarily the non-clinic participants who were speaking here. Their concerns about switching to an adult doctor fell into three main categories. So concerns about the quality of doctor-patient relationships, and this goes back to some of the trust and trauma issues that I was speaking about earlier. Concerns about the quality of care within the adult care system, and concerns about insurance coverage and cost of care. Now, we did have one clinic participant who noted some concerns as well, and his concerns were about insurance coverage and cost of care. That's a major issue for these youth. However, when we looked at some of the other measures that we were trying to develop within the clinic, so measures of medication self-efficacy, self-advocacy, and self-care, we did not find any differences. Pretty much, it's not even significant differences. We didn't see any differences. And this is somewhat to be expected. We are collecting data on the clinic operations and how youth interact with the clinic. And as part of that, we've seen that they come in to the clinic with an idea that they're doing much better with their self-care than they are. And then we see kind of a drop-off in their sense of self-efficacy because they're able to look more clearly at what's going on. And then over time, we see an increase as they're actually building the skills for self-management. So some of the conclusions are that specialized transition support and education programs can ease the concern of young people with special health care needs. And even a small exposure to transition support services can result in significant reduction of anxiety and concern about adult care. Improvements in the long-term medication management, self-advocacy, and self-responsibility for care did not occur with limited exposure to the intervention. This is not surprising. These are skills that take time to build. So research is continuing with the clinic population to better understand the time frame for change and which aspects of the intervention have the greatest efficacy. So like I mentioned, we are doing quite a bit of tracking with the patients who are being seen within the program, and we're expected within the next 2 to 3 years to be able to start analyzing with that and seeing some trajectory. I'd like to speak briefly about some of the additional policy measures that we're looking at to ease transition. These are things that are occurring outside of the individual patient responsibility. So implementation of the Accountable Care Act. This is over time going to reduce the financial concerns young people have about continuing to afford the medical care they need. Right now, obviously, there are still a lot of concerns. We would strongly urge anyone who's working with youth who have these concerns to make sure that when enrolling in the ACA that they're working with a healthcare navigator of some sort. We have had some youth that when they transition over, because paperwork was filled out wrong, they're not in the right medical group to see the provider that their records were transferred to. So we really want to make sure that they are working with somebody who can get them into the correct programs that are both affordable for them and provide the care that they need. We're also looking at something we call a co-caring model. So two subspecialty care centers at CHLA have done this. They've managed to get some adult care providers that they are transferring patients to impaneled with California Children's Services so that they can meet with youth under a co-caring model who are going to transfer over to these adult care providers, and that's paid for within the children's wraparound services. So this has been really critical for ensuring that youth are getting to their landing pad destinations. So right now that's being done, I believe, in cystic fibrosis and rheumatology. So they have adult care providers who are meeting with youth starting at age 20 for regular appointments in the regular adult clinic. And finally, the development of adult care landing pads, this is actually huge. There's only so much we can do on the pediatric side. We need professional development and education and structural support for the adult care doctors who are going to be seeing these youth. Many of them, one of the issues, as we know, young adult development does not end at 18 or 21, 22, 23, 24-year-olds. They still frequently have lives that are messy. Adult care providers are not always ready or willing to deal with that. So we need to help the adult care providers, the adult subspecialty providers in particular, to understand normal young adult development, to know what to expect of these youth in terms of differences in medication compliance and stuff like that, and to be sensitive to their needs. This is a huge thing that we actually can't do from pediatrics. It needs to start being done from the adult care doctors. We can provide information, but they need to kind of, we've started doing this to some extent at USC, but the support from the institution has been more limited than we would like. So thank you in particular to Dr. Diane Tanaka, the director of the clinic, Ellen Iverson, who's the director of research at Adolescent Medicine, Bill Kenny, who was one of our nurses early in developing this, and Elizabeth Morasso, our MSW, for bringing together the conceptual framework, and we deeply appreciate the youth who participated in sharing their lives with us. For more information, this is my contact information, as well as Ellen Iverson, our Director of Research. And I can write this down for you if you'd like. We have a very nice documentary that was done by an MSW student who profiled three patients who were from CHLA who were over age 21 and were looking back at some of the issues they had faced. It's a short, I think, 15, 20-minute documentary. It's really fascinating. And it was very well done, so we appreciate that. So I can write down the link for anyone who needs it. So.